It's our 100th show. It's our 100th show. If you count the 19 Against Medical Advice's 81 incident reports, that adds up in my math to 100 mother-flippin' shows. Am I right, Tom Heineber?
Heck yeah, it's show number 1,697, though, if you count all the ones he did from his bathroom.
But you know what? Those are the real shows. That's what people think. They come for this, but they stay for me on the pot complaining about my United Airlines flight attendant.
Science.
Science! Guys, welcome, welcome, welcome. Today we're going to talk about happiness in healthcare, and is it attainable, and what is the nature of it? Because, you know, there was a little bit of news. You guys may have heard about it, because somebody was like, oh, one minute I'm a clerk in a nursing department at Mercy Hospital in Massachusetts, and the next minute I'm like, go to the LaCroix cam. I'm sipping LaCroix out the bot, cause I'm rich, cause I just won the lotterizzle. LaCroix. She won the lottery. Roll the clip, Logan.
53-year-old Mavis Wanzik still can't believe it. The mother of two grown children was leaving work last night when her coworker read off the numbers that would change her life.
I go, hey, I have that. He goes, let me see that ticket. He goes, you just won. I go, you're joking. Come on, please.
As soon as she realized she won, Wanzik called the medical center where she worked for 32 years.
I've called them and told them I will not be coming back.
Dude, happy. Okay.
By the way, it's not in that clip, but I like that she said in the press conference her dream was just to be left alone in her bed. She has $750 million. She's like, everyone leave me alone. I'm gonna be in my bed.
Mavis pretty much, poof, she had every frontline healthcare worker's dream who's working in Health 2.0, which is to get the fuck out of Health 2.0. Like, every single person is like, I wish I could win the lot. My dad, at the end of his career, when it was becoming 2.0, he's like, I play the lottery every freaking week, okay? Because one day, I'll get out of this, because it's so bad, okay, Babu? It's terrible. She lived the dream, and she made a phone call, and she was like, I'm out! And many people in healthcare can relate to her and say, you know what? If I won the lottery, I would step the heck off this understaffed ward where I'm treated like crap and I feel no sense of purpose and I have had the life beat out of me and I'm gonna go do what makes me happy, whatever that is. And so I thought it'd be a great topic for a show today because first of all, what's so wrong with healthcare that that's how we feel? I thought this was our calling, right? And second, what is the deal with happiness? Does winning the lottery actually lead to increased levels of happiness? And there's some data on this, which unsurprisingly contradicts the intuition that winning the lottery would make us infinitely happier in a sustainable way. It does not, apparently, for most people.
You want to hear the best thing I ever heard?
Come with it.
It's when you're outside and you're freezing and you're miserable and you're hungry, and you get inside and you get food and, you know, you dry off, et cetera, et cetera. It's stuff that makes the difference. And that really does equate to a big difference in your happiness, right? It takes you from despair to being happy.
Yeah.
And so that's the truth. The lie is that we think having that much more stuff is going to elevate our happiness that much more. And so we all look at Bill Gates and we're like, that guy just must be walking around on cloud nine. He can do anything he wants. We're all looking at Mavis like, she made it! You know, like...
I'm rich, bitch! I mean, this is exactly right, and I think there's an idea in psychology of the hedonistic treadmill, or the hedonic treadmill. Let me explain. So hedonism is sort of the search for stuff and pleasure and those kind of things. And many people make predictions that if I had a little extra money, if I had more, cash, or stuff, I would be happier. And remember, The part of our brain that allows humans to actually predict the future is an evolutionary snap. It just happened, and guess what? It's completely flawed. So affective prediction, in other words, the ability to predict your own emotional state or happiness based on a series of circumstances that you imagine in your brain, the wiring for that is really bad. It's really ghetto. It's not what the frontal lobe or the neocortex actually evolved to do, the rider in the elephant and rider metaphor. It really is a bad predictor of what's going to make you happy. And it turns out there is data looking at lottery winners and people who've suffered accidents, paraplegics, people like Dr. Pete Poulos, who I interviewed on the show. These are people who've had life-changing events, and you would think their level of happiness is not great because so much has been taken from them and they've had to adjust to horrible changes. When you would think compared to lottery winners, they would be very unhappy. But it turns out they actually, on average, are slightly happier on a day-to-day basis than the lottery winners. And the theory is that humans have a sort of a set point. They have a set point of happiness that you're kind of born into. In other words, it's your genetic lottery. Go to the inset cam. For example, LaCroix. Like, I have a certain level of genetic happiness that I operate at this level, you know, like right about here. And I'm born that way. I'm just lucky or unlucky in terms of happiness. But the LaCroix enables maybe a slight bump in my baseline level of happiness so that I optimize genetically where I can get to, right? Whereas if you take my LaCroix away right now, I'll be like, oh, I'm slightly less happy than I should. But I'm gonna hover around and always kind of end up at this average set point that I'm born into. Well, it turns out the same is true if you win the lottery or you become injured to the point where you're a quadriplegic or a paraplegic. What it looks like is you will drift back to your set level of happiness, and that makes you wonder, is chasing money, is chasing material stuff, beyond what Tom said, which is the basic level of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, like how much do you need to be comfortable and survive and feed yourself and your family? Once you reach that, what does the rest do for you, right?
Do you remember seeing the study that said, I think it's $70,000 a year is supposed to be where happiness peaks?
I remember that.
I mean, obviously that's variable. If you're in a coastal city or something like that,
right,
it's probably going to be more.
Right.
But in general, the average in America is 70K.
I think because probably they were looking at, if you believe that data, it means that 70K is where your needs are met, and now everything else is kind of fluff. And this idea of the hedonic treadmill, in other words, you're constantly chasing happiness with material and you always end up settling back to your baseline happiness, right? I think it's real. I mean, I've experienced it in my own life. When I became an attending and I started making more money, I bought a car, I did this, I bought a house. It really, the level of happiness just went boop, but it didn't do a lot. Now the question is then, what will optimize your happiness in a sustainable way? And this is where Mavis's winning the lottery becomes real interesting.
This is a good point, because it's actually not money. Everybody thinks it's money, but it's drugs.
It's drugs,
mm-hmm.
And also, guys, I'm gonna be honest with you, it's sex. So if you're if you're getting laid 24/7 and you're surrounded by drugs, I don't care what your happiness set point is, you're like at Pablo Escobar happiness, right? So joking aside, I think in Mavis's case, it was pretty clear because she was talking to coworkers, like, you know, I don't really want to continue doing this job. I wish I could retire early. There was something potentially soul-sucking about her career. She wasn't finding a sense of purpose or connection. Something was missing. And she was ready to stop. And something that might have made her happy was being able to stop that. And what I want to hear is from people at Mercy Hospital, where she works. How shitty do you feel right now? Sucker! Your coworker just won $700 million, of which after taxes it's 300 and some million more money than you could spend in a lifetime unless you're an idiot like MC Hammer, which that could happen. Please, Hammer, don't spend it all in one place.
Well, how rude of Mavis not to start an office pool. Come on, Mavis, on the unit. Come on, girl.
Right now, everyone's...
I was talking about this with my wife because they have a pool going on their floor and she's like, I didn't put in money, it's stupid. Like none of them are gonna win the lottery. I was like, but what if they do? You're gonna be so mad. You could have been a part of that.
I believe Logan's investment strategy actually was winning the lottery. So he invests 70% of his income in lottery tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing, guys. But you know, look, So Mavis's coworkers, I want to hear from them in private messages or in the comments at Mercy. Like, what's it like? Are you guys happy for her? Are you pissed? Are you jealous? Did she deserve it? Did she contributed 32 years of her life to Health 2.0 and some of it to 1.0? And is this her way out? But here's a question. So I'm going to pose this question back to you. Because looking at data, it turns out...
Oh, my God. Shh. Be quiet, Z. Marie says, when my coworker hit for $200 million at Cleveland Clinic, she gave her department $10,000 each.
Wow.
What? It's and then always hospital workers that win it, man.
And then she vanished. That's what it says.
It's like lunch ladies and people that work at the hospital.
Yeah, it's
those
true.
Are the people that... And like school bus drivers.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket right now because this shit is just charmed.
Dude, you're not going to win because you're not a lunch lady, dude.
Oh, you don't think I'm a lunch lady? Who makes the kids lunch? It's actually Mrs. Dog. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I actually had a fear of winning the lottery because if I actually won, I'd be worried that people would be like, oh, this fucking doctor won the lottery. Like, oh, that's just useless. And what Mavis did was she didn't even fuck around. She went right on stage and was like, I won!
Which is the worst thing you can do. Because like, everybody knows you got free money now, and anybody who's ever met you is going to be like, Mave, what's up, girl?
You didn't.
I'm trying to open a waffle stand. I just need a quick 500K. Like, waffle don't even worry about it, you know?
Girl.
Got you.
Girl, you and I both know you didn't earn that money. I earned it just by being your friend.
In fact,
so hit me up with some. Also, have a great investment strategy in the Cayucas Mountains where I got a little farm where we're growing some stuff. So maybe you could help a brother out.
I just realized that we're a medical show with big reach. Hey, Maeve. Yo, give your boy a mill. Like, Tommy T-Bones is kind of broke. You know
take
what I'm
donations,
saying?
Yo.
Yeah.
Mavis.
Hit up our Patreon, Mavis.
You got to understand something, Mavis. We're broke as fuck right now. Okay? All this shit costs money, all right? Do you know what? Logan sold his Jeep. He sold his Jeep because he wants to save money, and he bought a much cheaper car. And that's what's going on, Mavis. So, Mavis, listen. We're here fighting for Health 3.0, and you were given a gift. And it's not going to make you happy. $70,000 is what's going to make you happy, Mavis. The rest, we need it. We need that money.
Andrew says, Inside Edition said that she could spend, Mavis, could spend $1 million per month for 28 years. It's actually a lot more than that, because if you take $336 million, you put it into government bonds or something at 4% a year.
Breach.
What is that, $25 million a year? So you can spend $25 million a year, not only for the rest of your life, but for all your descendants' life. So it's a lot of money.
Tom had the idea for a sequel to Brewster's Millions, the movie where Richard Pryor had
it's called Brewster's Billions, and you do it with, like, Kevin Hart. It's an amazing idea, okay? Call me, Hollywood.
Wait a minute. What you're telling the brother is that he's got to spend $1 billion in a month without having anything to show for it? Oh, it is on.
You could see it. I mean, that's the video.
Yeah, yeah. His uncle was like a tech genius
yep.
who left him $70 billion.
But gave him the provision.
In order to get the full $70 billion, you got to spend $1 billion. Because see, when I was a kid, I smoked a cigar. And my dad, he was like, you're going to smoke a whole box of cigars. And then I hated cigars. So you're going to hate spending money. Because that's the plot of Brewster's Millions, people, if you haven't seen it. It's one of the best Richard Pryor movies.
Back to happiness, bitches. Here's the thing. The reason we're talking about the lottery is not to be jackasses, although that's part of it. It's because we're trying to figure out what it is that makes humans happy. How do we find a sense of purpose in a broken healthcare system? And what gives humans happiness? Well, here's some interesting data. So it turns out a shorter commute would make you as happy as a 40% raise, according to some data. And I'm going to be honest, this is absolutely true. When I was in the Bay Area, commuting about 30 minutes to work every day, sometimes longer in traffic, and sometimes an hour if I'm going to Fremont on the other side of the Bay, that sucked. But I never knew how much it sucked till I moved to Vegas and everything was 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I was living in the Ogden in downtown Vegas and walking to Turntable, and it was basically a walk commute, and it transformed my level of happiness. There were other things. I had autonomy, at least perceived autonomy. I had a sense of progress. I'm like, we're building something that's ours. I had a sense of connection and purpose. We're connecting with other people for a higher purpose, which is to transform healthcare for others, to help others. And what that does is it gives you a true and unshakable sense of serenity and happiness that you cannot buy. You cannot substitute material possessions for. And it sounds like a fucking cliche, but it's absolutely true.
Everyone says they'll take the raise, Z.
Annie Johnson says, I'd square up my debt, I'd take care of my family, then live like a queen, maybe even go out to dinner. I like how everybody's got the most basic stuff they want to do. You guys can go out to dinner right now. Treat yourself, girl.
That's right.
You deserve it.
Well, some people are still trying to fit that Maslow's bottom of the pyramid, just taking care of personal needs, right? Our CNAs out there that don't get paid a whole lot, they work really hard, they're on the front lines getting abused by patients, not getting credit. Like, those folks are really, they're not at the level of income where happiness is now coming easily, right?
Totally.
Now, where it's interesting is, like, having more free time will make you happier than having more money. That was one of the premises of the study. And also, it turns out getting a paid vacation from your boss leads to more happiness than receiving the equivalent amount of cash. Which, to me, I would be furious if my boss was like, okay, I'm sending you to Hawaii paid, but you're not getting money. First of all, I don't have a boss. My boss are these two guns right here, okay? Unfortunately, you think that, but then you actually take the vacation and you go and you have this experience instead of a thing. You're chasing an experience and a memory and a connection with the people that you go with. It's very, very different. So here's a question, Zipak. If you won the lottery today, and I want you to respond in the comments. If you won the lottery today, would you quit your healthcare job as it is? Would you walk off like Mavis did? Or would you not? And if you wouldn't, why? And let's read some comments and then I'll tell you what my answer is. What would you do, Tom, if you won the lottery?
I always find this to be a really interesting exercise, what you would do with X number of hundreds of millions of dollars. And for me, I would do what I'm doing now, just at scale. So I would—
So you would masturbate, like—
That's right.
70 times a day.
I would just put it all in Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin is like winning the lottery in slow motion,
you
guys.
Every Bitcoin.
It's amazing.
You could buy the whole market.
Yeah.
So being Tom Heineberg at scale means watching Game of Thrones episodes all day. It means surfing the internet and sending me really dumb memes. And it means driving a Chevy Volt with two really, really, really bald tires on the front that you just replaced. That's Tom Heineberg at scale.
No, see, at scale, you watch Game of Thrones. Like, you get a big projector, you watch Game of Thrones on a billboard. That's scale. You know what I'm saying?
Winter is coming, Tom. Winter is coming. All right, so... let's read some comments and then I'll tell you what I would do. So Stephanie Lapid, who's our favorite nurse in town here, I would still be a nurse because I find it fulfilling. Well, then you have found your passion, your purpose, and your connection, and the extra money is not going to lead to happiness. It'll just lead to freedom to do nursing without the constraints of worrying about whether you're paid or whether you get fired or any of that. So it means you get to be the best nurse you can be without having to worry about bullshit. I love that. If I won the lottery, says Jelaine Sade, I'd look for a job at a better hospital, go down to part-time, and be a professional volunteer for causes I love. I like that.
Renee says, I would not quit, but I would develop an opportunity to practice the way I want to instead of how I want to. That's doing what you love at scale.
It's doing what you love at scale.
Yeah.
I asked Mrs. Dog what she would do because we were doing this exercise this morning, and she said, I would go back, I would buy a property in the Bay Area, and I would commute between Vegas and the Bay Area, and I would spend the time I'm in the Bay connecting with my friends and volunteering at Stanford as a radiologist, a chest radiologist, to teach house staff and read films because that's what I'm passionate about. That's what she would do. Not talking about traveling the world or doing all these other things. She's like, I might dabble in that just for fun until I'm bored of it and then do that.
This is a great exercise though, because like everybody's dreams are very attainable. There aren't a lot of us that are like, I want to own GE, you know, or like, I want to be like the head of the Federal Reserve or something, like anything you could do with a lot of money. Everybody wants a nap. Yeah. They want to go to dinner.
Yeah. You want to be able to pee.
Your wife could do her version of her dream. She'd just have to fly Southwest and get a condo instead of having a mansion and having a private plane.
Right, which is what she does now.
Right.
Which is what she does now. So here's the thing, guys. Like, when I play this game with myself, I think, okay, I won the lottery. After the initial euphoria of, oh my God, I got a bunch of free money, goes away, my second thought is, when are we doing the show? And like, what new equipment can we get that's actually gonna make the show more engaging? And then I would pay Tom and Logan a bunch of money to do what they do so that we never have to worry about that stuff. And we would just do the show until Tom and Logan got bored of it. And we would grow it. And then we would form an actual grassroots movement that we would fund to actually physically transform medicine to 3.0. And we would lobby for stuff that we really care about. And that would be what I would do with the money, because I'm already at a stage of Maslow's hierarchy where my basic needs are met. I think my family's okay. We save money over the years. So now it's about making a difference and finding your purpose and your real calling, right? So see, this
Annie,
is...
Annie Johnson says, I write books. Girl, start writing your book now.
Write your book now. You don't need a lot of money to write a book. You don't need any money. Nowadays, you can just write your damn book. People send me their books all the time. Z-Dog, can you read this book? I'm like, bitch, I can't read anything. First of all, I don't read. Okay? I audible it into my ear.
But then Angela says, I love healthcare too much to ever leave. And Stephanie Lappet said, you know, you can't buy the feeling of helping people.
Mm.
You could buy 350 Bugatti Veyrons.
Which is better. It's the same.
Significantly mm-hmm. better.
Yeah. Black X6 Phantom. White X6 look like a panda. Look. Step off the hedonic treadmill, my friends. Those of you who are on it, who are always chasing material stuff, find your connection. In healthcare, it is actually helping others. And if you don't feel that connection, you might be in the wrong space. Because everybody throughout the spectrum of healthcare, you can be a CNA, you can be a materials guy working in the, you know, supplies. It doesn't matter. Your part is crucial to the bigger whole, but you have to feel that that's your calling and your connection. Otherwise, you're always going to be struggling. I don't know where Mavis fit in this whole thing when she won the lottery. I think she was just wanted to retire because she'd been doing it for 32 years, right? She might have been fully connected and fully purposed, but now she's like got the freedom to go explore other things that she wants to do. That's great. That's what money gets you guys. It's not material stuff. It's freedom to find out who you actually are, what you care about, and what you're going to do to help the world and find your place in it.
Danielle Heineberg, my beautiful wife, says, I'd adopt 20 dogs. Can I start my dream now, babe? Listen, people, some dreams aren't realistic. Okay? You know, I forget what I said before. You should just give up on those dreams. You don't need them. You don't need them in your life.
What's amazing is, you know, many people marry cat ladies. My mom is a cat lady and has thousands of cats. You married a dog lady. Like, you could end up drowning in dog feces by the time you're 40, Tom Heineberg. You know, I'm just saying, Danielle.
Cats are horrible.
Listen, cats, they're not horrible. Do you know why? Because they don't give a fuck. That's why I like cats, because they're just like, you know what? I'm gonna leave you here in this house with a litter box and a bowl of food, and I'm gonna go on vacation for 2 weeks, and you're just gonna suck it.
See, yeah, I like how Mavis's thing was like, I just want to be at home in my bed.
I love it.
That's all she wants to do in this whole world, you know?
Mavis looks like she suffered a lot. I mean, she's been in the game a long time, and she plays the lottery to win, all right? And when you play the lottery, you play to win. You know what, Tom? In the game of lotteries, you win or you die. There's no middle ground.
Or you just don't win.
I admit I couldn't leave healthcare. I've wanted this since I was a kid watching MASH with my mom, says Jillian Sade. Were you saying something, Logan?
Or Tom said something.
I was just gonna say, do you ever play the lottery, Z? Do you ever play it?
I used to when I was younger, and now, like, so actually for this Powerball thing, when I was in the Central Valley of Cali with my parents, my dad was like, you know, the Powerball is up to like 700 million, okay? So I know you are driving through, just buy a couple tickets. He literally would tell, buy a couple tickets, what's the harm? You have money? Buy some tickets. And he started getting agitated about it. And I'm like, Dad, you don't win the lottery. And you know what he said? You don't win if you don't play. He was dead serious. I'm like, you were statistically trained, you know, but you know, this is the thing, it's the dream. It's the dream of freedom, right? That we all...
Well, there's a lot of people that think it's like a tax on the poor, and they're right, because it was a stupid ass decision for every single one of you to play, except for you, Mavis. You killed it, girl.
Just you.
Mavis, you crushing it, girl. Yeah, it's true. It is kind of a tax on the poor because you're selling dreams that will never come true, right? Except for Mavis, who we all collectively now despise because she's so awesome.
So I think the audience is about split 50-50. Like, half the people would stay in healthcare and half are ready to just vamos forever, you know? Where would you have been? At different points in your career, I can imagine you would have been having different feelings, right?
Yeah, like, I'll tell you, there was a time in residency training when if I had won the lottery, I would have been like, bye, bitches, I am out. You guys can clean, you can do your own rectal exams, you can get yelled at by attendings. I am out, this hierarchy sucks, this system has no hope. All I see is black at the end of this tunnel, and the tunnel is a rectal vault. I am out. And then, you know, midway through my career as a hospitalist, I would have said, you know what, I'm going to do hospital medicine as a hobby and just see patients because I love to see patients. And now at this stage in my career, I want to do my show. I want to get out on the road. I want this movement to succeed for Health 3.0. And I also want to see patients. And as it is now, Tom, I see patients for free. And I teach and I do those kind of things, not as much as I'd like, but I do it. And I did it this week, and I would always come into the office here and be like, oh my God, dude, there was this patient, and there was this patient, and this patient. I was re-energized to try to realize how terribly effed up the system is, and it's our mission and our calling to try to help inspire others to fix it and do the best we can.
But in the same breath, he told me, but dude, I'm so glad that I don't have to get mired down in the muck anymore. He was like, I can just swoop in, fix things, and then swoop out, you know? So it'd be hard for you to judge anybody who feels bad you know, they don't feel energized.
Believe that, guys. Imagine you don't have to worry about all the billing. You don't have to worry about making a living. You don't have to worry about the inner office politics. You just get to teach, see patients, connect, learn yourself. Like, that's a magical thing. And that's what look, having money would allow you that freedom to do it. Because then physicians, nurses, others could volunteer in that way. And there'd be enough of them that you'd never be stuck in a particular rut. When I did hospital medicine for 10 years and my living depended on it, it's very hard to see truths outside of a system when your income depends on the system working. That's one of the most true philosophical statements. It's like you are dependent on the matrix, therefore you must believe in the matrix. Sometimes being able to step out, like right now, the fact that I get some people who complain, Tom, that are like, you don't see patients all the time like we do. You're not one of the tribe anymore. Screw you. You're no better than Dr. Oz.
Right, it's constant.
Yeah.
Constant refrain.
And here's the thing. If I were seeing patients all day long and my income depended on it, do you think I could come here and say, fuck the system? Do you think I could come here and do what we do and have the time and the bandwidth to do this and still stay connected to patient care in a way that doesn't burn me out so that I can do all this and so that we can lead a movement and what is effectively a revolution for frontline workers? No, you can't. And it took me a while to come to peace with that. But I have, and I realized this is now the second act of my life and career that I have to do. And what I would encourage you guys is, decide, realize, are you in the right spot in your calling in your life? And if you're not, you need to start planning for what that next move is. And the lottery is not planning, all right? Buying lottery tickets is not planning for the future. It's a hedge against ridiculous statistics.
Well, yeah, it's like if you guys want to be financially secure, you can just plan that out now, right? If you're waiting in the lottery to make you financially secure, it's not gonna happen.
Nope. And that's the thing, like financial security has to do with some conditioning, some training, some understanding of things like opportunity cost, of how to get out of debt, of managing your budget and your money, not chasing the hedonic treadmill where you're searching for material gain. It's not gonna make you happy. What will make you happy is having the freedom to pursue your calling, and that means managing your money wisely. Many people in healthcare don't know how to do this. We're not trained to do this. We're taught to delay gratification, but then when the gratification comes, we don't know how to handle it. Right? So, you know, whether you're reading Dave Ramsey or whatever guru, whatever financial guru you're reading, hopefully it's somebody who preaches rational management of money, because in healthcare, we don't get a lot of that.
I got Logan on the Dave Ramsey plan yesterday.
I read the whole damn thing in one night.
And then he sold his car.
And then I immediately sold my car and paid off a credit card.
So it's amazing because Logan with Tom, you know, they made a good amount of money doing video production. And when you're that young, Logan, how old are you? Like 23?
25.
20, now you're 25.
Yeah.
But when you started Variables, you were like what? 22.
23. Mm-hmm.
And at 22, making really good money doing video production because he's really, really good at what he does. And with Tom, they were a really good partnership. But when you get a lot of money early on and you don't quite understand the principles of managing it, you know, you buy a car, you buy a house, you buy all this stuff, but then you're in debt and all these other things happen. And many of us in healthcare have the same thing. We start getting paid and we're like, we don't know what to do. We overextend. We think that we're chasing happiness with stuff, whereas maybe a shorter commute would be better. You know, there's different ways to find happiness, right, after you reach your minimal threshold. So now Logan is revamping the way he thinks about money. He's reading Dave Ramsey. He's getting out of debt. and that's going to set him up for real success no matter how much money he makes in the future, right? Because he ain't going to make shit with me because we are broke. Just understand that.
That's exactly right. You know, and I think a lot of people in medicine especially get trapped in that, you know, you get student loans and, you know, your student loan payment is like the lowest interest rate. So you're like, I'm just not going to, you know, I'll work on that one last, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, life happens to you. Credit cards happen to you. Kids happen to you. Medical emergencies happen to you. Basically, Murphy's Law happens to you. And 25 years have gone by and you still have your student loan.
Yep.
And you're like, what do I know? Doctors make $400,000 a year who have their student loans still.
Yeah, of course.
It's crazy.
There's tons. There's tons like that. Now, what I think in our 100th episode of the formal live show, I want to impart to people is that we want to be this platform where we talk about issues that affect us in healthcare and also beyond healthcare. We want to affect patients' lives. We want to educate. We want to entertain. I think we have the crew that is in position to do that. Yesterday, we did a experiment where we did a podcast only. We got a lot of feedback that people liked the live show, but I think we ought to do both because sometimes a deep dive in a podcast is a good idea. The live performances and talks are important to spread the word about 3.0, but more and more, we're going to start diving into things like how do you manage your money and what is an actionable plan for healthcare reform in the U.S.? How do you pay for it? Is single payer the answer? Is it something else? And we're going to have guests on the show to talk about this at every kind of level. And once we get, we settle in on something, believe me, we're going to push and push and push. And then when we win the lottery, Tom, we'll fund the hell out of it.
And LaCroix.
Oh, where's my LaCroix at? Get that LaCroix cam. There it is.
Yeah.
Now, LaCroix, I need you to understand something, LaCroix.
Nope. Oh, wait.
We want your money. You don't sponsor our show. We drink your shit. Sponsor our damn show. Okay, don't be bitches. Don't be so cheap. You have a product that tastes good, has no sugar in it. It's bubbly as hell. I drink it. Give us some money. Don't be dumb. LaCroix. Screw LaCroix. Unless they want to give us money.
All right, you want to call it Z-Dog MD?
No, I want to keep talking like this useless drivel for the rest of the night. Yeah, of course I want to call it Tom Heineber.
Let's call it then, bro. Listen up, people. Buy Bitcoin. It's like winning the lottery in slow motion. Love you guys.
I hate you so much, Tom Heineber.
I hate you too, Tom Heineber.
We all hate you. Tom at scale, even more hateful. We love you, ZPAC, though. LaCroix, give us money.
What?
Seriously, give us money.